Listen up, San Diego.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
It's the end of the workday, but Gwen and Chris is just getting started. New year, same Gwen and Chris.
Well, you don't need a shrink to tell you that this guy's a raving psycho.
With Tony Quinn Jr.
So what about the other one?
I can't hear.
Maybe you should. Why, so you're wearing, you're actually wearing headphones that don't work?
I need some sort of, like, it's all fuzzy. It's like.
There goes another promo.
And Chris Ello.
All right, easy on the buzzer. It's Friday, for heaven's sakes.
It's Friday.
And if you buzz me, I'm going to come over there and strangle you.
Gwen and Chris help you get home from work. Now on 97.3 The Fan.
Welcome to the 5 o'clock hour. Tony Gwynn Jr. here with you alongside Thomas Andrews. Bo Templin has joined us here on the show. The Open Division playoffs start today in basketball. My alma mater taking on Torrey Pines tonight in the first round. I learned of this through, of course, our high school spotlighter, I should call him, Coach John Cantera, who's always in tune with what's going on in the city of San Diego. Coach John Cantera joins us here on the SDCCU Fan Hotline. The High School Report is brought to you by Lolita's Mexican Food, serving San Diego's best Mexican food since 1984 with 7 locations in town. Lolita's Mexican Food. Coach, how you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm going to go out and watch that game tonight between my alma mater, Torrey Pines, playing host to your alma mater, Poway. I'm looking forward to it. Both teams coming in, Tony, 24-4 on the year. They played earlier in the year over at your alma mater at Poway, and Falcons got them early in the year by 5 points. This ought to be a heck of a game. In fact, we got 8 teams in the open division, and it's the first round tonight, which they call the quarterfinals. We got Christian up at Cathedral. That's going to be a great game. We got Francis Parker and Foothills Christian going at it tonight at 7:45 out of Cuyamaca College. That should be a heck of a game. And then you've got Modern Day Catholic going in to take on St. Augustine, which would be another great game. In fact, when you take a look at the 8 teams in these 4 games, there's no layup for any team tonight. All eight of these teams have been great. Every team's won at least 20 games on the year. And I expect an upset or two tonight. I don't know who it's going to be, but it's not like, the 8th seed is going to get run off the court by the 1 seed or the 2 seed going to beat the 7th seed. I mean, we got some great games tonight.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like it. Before we get to your spotlight, Coach, I got to get your quick thoughts on the Lakers waiving DeMarcus Cousins. It seems like they're on their way to signing Markieff Morris. What's your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, obviously, Markieff Morris comes in, he's healthy. And you've seen, like me, this year watching all the Laker games. DeMarcus Cousins has been over on the end of the bench. He's even been traveling with the team. He's back doing a lot of things right now. He made a comment late last week and again early this week that, he's hoping to be back for the playoffs, as did Frank Vogel. But I think they need a roster spot. There's no guarantees DeMarcus Cousins is going to be able to come back. And if you can upgrade the roster with a healthy guy that's going to take pressure off some of the other guys, so be it. We've already seen what the Clippers have done here. They brought Marcus Morris in, Marquise's brother, a week ago. They brought in Reggie Jackson, who got bought out by the Detroit Pistons as well. So, everybody's kind of gauging up for the playoffs. And I'm kind of anxious to see tonight. The Lakers are playing a pretty good Memphis team, by the way, tonight. And then they've got an afternoon game against Boston on Saturday or on Sunday, which will be a nationally televised game. I'm kind of anxious to see if there's any rust on the Lakers, a little bit of hangover of this All-Star break.
I know they certainly need it to break. So I'm anxious to see what they have in store. All right, Coach, let's get to this spotlight. What do you got for us this week?
Okay, once again this week on the female side, we're going to go with a wrestler because we've had a lot of these big wrestling matches working our way towards the state tournament. Out of Valley Center High School, a wrestler, a junior by the name of Sierra Mefford, the unbeaten junior, ran through the field at 162 pounds to wrap up the Masters title last weekend. And in the final, Sierra pinned Eastlake's Brooke Klomp in only 25 seconds. Both wrestlers will, though, advance to the state championships. And so congratulations to Sierra Mefford, junior wrestler from Valley Center High School. And on the boys' side, You know, this guy's had a great career. He's going to Stanford. He's a kid from Torrey Pines, Brandon Angel. He's their big stud up there this year. The Falcons closed out the Avocado League West play last week with wins over Syracuse and La Costa Canyon. And Angel put up 28 points, 9 boards, and 3 assists in that win over San Marcos. And then he closed out the perfect league season for the Falcons with 23 points, 8 rebounds. And the Mavericks got beat that night by the Falcons. Falcons finished the regular season 24-4 and 10-0 in league play. So congratulations to Brandon Angel, who signed to go up and play for the Stanford Cardinals starting next fall.
That is awesome, Coach. I haven't really got your take on what your thought would be for this playoff that Major League Baseball is talking about.
You know what, Tony, a lot of people, I guess I've been a little surprised how many people have been negative on
me
it.
Too.
I actually like it. I think it makes a lot of sense. It keeps teams engaged. It definitely keeps fans engaged.
Yeah.
And you know, I think it's kind of cool. And the other aspect, you know, if you're the number one team, you obviously don't have to play, you know, the first few days. You can get your pitching staff in order. But if you're the number two team, you get to pick who you want to play. So that would add to a rivalry.
A little intrigue, right?
Pick somebody outside of who, you know, normally, you know, two would play six and three would play five and so on. But, you know, you may match up with another team that's a little bit higher. You match up with them a little bit better. You go that direction, and that would kind of rankle the feathers of that other ball club, I think.
I would think so. How about your thoughts on the NFL and them wanting to expand? You like that idea, too?
NFL, I think, is perfect the way it is. I don't see – and I talked about it on the show yesterday. I mean, 16 games, when you go down in the locker room after a game and you see these guys, I mean, it looks like they've been in a car wreck.
Yeah.
You know, an extra game, I'm not buying that. I have no problem with expanding the playoffs, but as far as the regular season, 16 games is plenty.
I hear you, Coach. Well, as always, we appreciate you coming on and showing the high school kids some love, as usual. Have a good weekend, Coach.
Hey, have a great weekend. Boy, we got a lot of great sports. I'm looking forward to that big fight tomorrow night, too.
Yes, indeed. We will all be watching that. All right, Coach, take care.
Be well.
That was Coach John Quintero. Remember, the high school report is brought to you by Lolita's Mexican Food, serving San Diego's best Mexican food since 1984. With 7 locations in town, Lolita's Mexican Food. All right, we're going to get to break. I also need to say that this particular segment was brought to you by San Diego County BMW Centers. Right now, get APRs as low as 1.49% for 48 months on select 2016 through 2018 BMW certified models. See a San Diego County Credit Union, San Diego County BMW Center today for details or visit sdcountybmw.com. All right, we're going to take a step away. More Gwen and Chris when we return. San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. But first, here's some traffic with Kelly. Just after 5:15, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, rocking with Gwynn and Chris right now, and man, Chris, you had a very interesting blog today.
It's Friday.
Yeah.
So I was up working on my blog last night, and a lot of people are kind of kicking it around on the internet and on Twitter right now and getting their 2 cents in. So
no, I haven't had a chance to get up
on
there and
see
it.
You'll have a chance to comment on it right now, Tony. Today's subject was me trying to predict the Padres opening day lineup.
Okay.
Through nine. Here's the batting order, here's going to be playing where, and here's going to be the whole thing. So a couple of things that we have to know. First of all, who is the opponent going to be? Because you have to know, are you facing a right-handed pitcher or a left-handed pitcher?
Okay.
All right, they open up against the Rockies. The Rockies' ace, 90% sure, is going to be Herman Marquez.
It's not a
right-hander. Or Ubaldo Jimenez.
He got an invite from them, right?
I know. That's how desperate they are. But it's probably going to be Herman Marquez. And if it's not Herman Marquez, it would probably be John Gray. So I think either way, the Padres are going to face a right-handed pitcher on opening day. So my opening day lineup is based on the fact the Padres are facing a right-handed pitcher. Let me first give you my lineup, and then we can go through it and we'll try to kind of explain where I'm and what I'm thinking, and then I'll give you some of the arguments against it. Leading off is Fernando Tatis Jr. at shortstop. Batting second for me is Trent Grisham in right field. And before you start yelling and screaming about that one, I will explain. Batting third is Manny Machado at third base.
Who was leading off?
Tatis okay. leading off. Grisham batting second in right field. Manny Machado hitting third at third base. Now, in a cleanup spot, I am hoping that he has such a good spring that he forces his way into the spot, but I have Franchy Cordero batting cleanup in center field. Then I have Tommy Pham in left field. Then I have Eric Hosmer at first base. Francisco Mejia catching. Jurickson Profar at second base. And then I have to have a number nine guy, and my number nine guy is Garrett Richards, who I'm predicting will be the opening day starter for the Padres on the mound. So that's my lineup. Now, a couple of reasons why I went in that particular order with that, you know, with that one through six, especially, Tony. If I think, because everybody was quick to jump on the fact, hey, Tommy Pham has got to be one or two. He always bats second or first. He's too good. You got to have him up higher in the lineup. Let me just say this. If you start the game with Tatis, Pham, and Machado, then you're opening the game with three right-handed batters in a row
right.
against a really good right-handed pitcher. That's what I'm trying to avoid. So that's why I put Grisham in the number two hole. And in my lineup, the Padres would be going right, left, right, left, right, left for their first six hitters. I like that kind of balance. So that's why I have Grisham where I do. And why do I have Garrett Richards starting an opening day instead of Chris Paddock? You and I both talked about this. I just think you go with the guy that has a little more experience for the opening day, all of the stuff that goes along with it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think Garrett Richards would be – it doesn't mean that I don't think Chris Paddock will be the ace of the staff, I think, and I hope that he will be. But I'm predicting that it'll be Garrett Richards. So there's my starting nine. Now, obviously –
I don't have a problem with that. I think obviously in the perfect world, right?
Yeah.
Franchy Cordero shows he's healthy.
Right.
But
I mean,
he's got
to be
–
he's got to mash the ball in spring right. training to earn the number four spot in the order. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping he hits a couple of moonshots.
Yeah, Grisham
and
shows.
They go, wait a minute.
He comes
okay.
in, shows that he is capable of taking the center field position and
getting on base.
And getting on
that
base.
Whole thing.
Absolutely, because yeah. now you've spread out the guys throughout the lineup
bit,
that
right?
could get, that are your quote unquote on base guys. You know what I'm saying? You got Tatis. You move Pham down to what fifth? I think you
had
him
fifth. Yeah.
yeah. I don't mind that.
Okay.
Perfect
well,
world, yeah. Perfect
yeah,
scenario, that would be.
In a perfect scenario, I mean, I think Jace Tingler would love it if he could go left, right, right, or right, left, right, left, right, left, and then finish up with Mejia and Profar. Now, I haven't given the catching job to Mejia, certainly. Austin Hedges could come into spring training and hit the stuffing out of the ball, and then, you know, he could start on opening day, and you might move Profar to seven. You might move... Hedges to eight. You also might have Ty France, for all I know, have a big spring and beat out Profar at second base, although I would be surprised if on opening day you had France at second base. But there's so much competition. Will Myers is not in my opening day starting lineup. Either is Juan Lagares. Either is Josh Naylor. And I think Josh Naylor is another guy that's in that warrants some thinking here.
Yeah.
He's trimmed down. He's you know what Josh Naylor is? He's the Matt Mitchell of the Padres.
Oh,
he's trimmed
okay.
down like 15 pounds.
Okay.
He looks good. And
that means he's going to have a huge role. Man.
If he has a huge role and you know, I mean, the weight loss, I think he's really primed to really break out a little bit. And if Naylor can play the outfield at all, then his bat might warrant a spot in the lineup. I don't know if it's opening day, but I think he's another guy you got to consider.
Well, that's the beauty of spring training, right? Is that
sure.
all these questions will have their chance to be answered at some point
right.
during spring. Listen, you could even I'm not totally against having right in your lineup.
Yeah.
As long as it's, you know, you just don't have all rights, you know.
Sure. I mean, like, if they're all good, I mean, if you have Joe DiMaggio batting next to Cal Ripken Jr., you don't mind putting those two right-handed hitters together because
right.
they're pretty good.
Like, I could see a scenario in which Grisham leads off. You got Pham right there at second. Then you follow
and
that
then
with Tatis.
Then you go with Tatis
Jr. and Machado right there.
Yeah.
I think, by all accounts, there was nothing that Tatis couldn't handle. Righty, lefty, it didn't seem to really matter. So
I think they're going to stick with him in the leadoff spot. It's just my this is all my prediction. Yeah. I mean, I have no idea. They haven't even played a single spring training.
They very well may do that.
But we'll see. To me, there's only three guys that have automatically locked. Four. There's four guys that, in my mind, have locked up a spot on the opening day lineup. And I'm not talking about where they bat, but Tatis will be at shortstop, Machado will be at third, Pham will be in left field, and Hosmer will be at first base. Yeah. I think the other four spots are all up for grabs.
I think that's
fair.
I
think there's a lot of fun to be had in this spring, and I think there's a lot of competition. Now, I went a little bit beyond that, not too much beyond that in the blog, and you can always read it, of course, at 97.3thefansd.com if you want to check it out and throw your two cents in. One of the funny things that happened with the blog, though, Tony, was you always got to find a picture to put with the blog. Like, I don't go out and take my own picture. I have to actually find
one
somewhere that we're allowed to use on the internet. So I found a picture of Machado and Eric Hosmer together. And I put that as the picture to go along with my blog. And the headline says something like, the Padres have a lot of options when it comes to opening day lineup, but a couple of the sure things are Machado and Hosmer pictured.
Yeah.
And a couple of people wrote in, you forgot about Tatis. No, I didn't forget about Tatis. I just couldn't get him in the picture. He's not in the picture, but I didn't forget about him. I have him batting leadoff at shortstop, so please don't think that. And then the other part of it is, I mean, you know, you look at their rotation, Tony. I mean, it's not set in stone, certainly, but I think the five-man staff is – at least at this point, you know, certainly looks like it's going to be, you know, if Richards does start opening day, you'd probably have Paddock following him up, then Lamette, then Davies, and then Lucchese. Maybe Cal Quantrill sneaks in there. Maybe Mackenzie Gore just blows everybody away, or Patino, but I think that those guys are more likely to come up in the midseason. And the bullpen, there's a lot of competition, but I think in a lot of ways it's going to be tough to crack that bullpen.
It's going to be very tough.
It's going to be tough to crack that bullpen because when you look at who they've got, you know, Yates is obvious. You picked up Pagan.
Pomeranz
is obvious.
You
have Pomeranz. He's going to be in
Munoz
there for sure.
Munoz is
going to be in there. I think Matt Strom is the
sixth
guy.
Strom is going to be there. And that's six already.
That's six. And then the seventh guy is the big, tall Pierce Johnson.
Did we say Emilio Pagan yet?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So that's seven guys right there. That would mean that a guy like Trey Wingenter would be on the outside looking in. Michelle Baez.
That's seven, I mean, five starters. So you could have, if you want it, you could have one more.
Well, you could have eight, but I think the eighth would be Cal Quantrill. Are you going to send him down and get him starts in minor leagues? So those are some, look, there's plenty of fun stuff to still
be had in spring training. Who did we not name that we saw last year? Baez?
In terms of guys that played a big part of it last year,
were definitely probably in there.
I think the biggest name that would be missing from the bullpen would be Wingenter.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, that would be the one.
Okay.
For sure. Or I can't totally forget Jose Castillo either, the left-hander, if he's healthy.
He wasn't in that.
He's going to vie for a spot, too.
It's deep, like we said.
It is deep.
It's very deep.
It's going to be fun.
All right, we got to get to break. We'll have some more Gwen and Chris for you when we return. This is, as I said, Gwen and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Gwen and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello. Shortly after 5:30, we're talking countdown. And obviously with the Houston Astros at the top of everybody's mind and everybody's on the tip of everybody's tongue, we decided to do the top five most hated teams in all sports.
Can I just say this before we get to today's countdown? Yesterday's topic was as classic as I expected it to be.
Brilliant, I tell
you,
Chris.
Top five ways to eat eggs. And I have had at least a dozen people from wherever I've been today stop me, people at work, people running around, and go, egg salad, deviled eggs, basted eggs. That sounds terrible. I said, well, you've never tried basted eggs. If you tried them, they'd be in your top
You'd
five.
You'd feel differently.
And just so you know, Tony, the wife and I went out this morning, and we enjoyed breakfast burritos, and she was like, we got to go get breakfast burritos after that countdown yesterday. So the countdown yesterday blew up, like always. So we'll see if we can duplicate something close to that today.
Here we go.
Quinn and Chris like to rank things. Not college rankings, not athlete rankings.
So what's your point?
But their own rankings. And these rankings can be very serious.
Top five ways that we like potatoes.
Top five pizzas.
Top five ways to beat the heat.
I like where this is going. Giggity, giggity, giggity.
The countdown starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
By the way, before you start again, Lori and I had a little side wager going on how many basted eggs you ate this morning. And I said he probably didn't have any, but he was. I know he was talking about it.
I planned to have some last night.
Oh, that's right.
The bacon fat was removed before I could get to it.
Oh, come on. Yeah. This is Gwen.
So I didn't get a chance, or at least it had a whole bunch of soap and water in it, so I didn't get a chance to use it.
For that. Well, you'll get it one of these days.
When I got home, I had an honorary one put. Erica had to say, you have to do cheesy eggs, but when you, and you're making them, you crack them into a cup and throw the cheese into the cup so you can whisk the cheese with the eggs to cook it in.
Honorary selection.
Yeah, as of
coming
yesterday.
From America.
I just remembered it now.
It is unbelievable, though, that everybody has their 2 cents on this egg.
On
thing.
Egg thing, of course.
It's unbelievable.
It's a staple of breakfast.
That's right, man. It's a staple of life.
Touche. All right, you go first.
All right, top five teams that we love to hate. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put the Astros at number five.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of new to the gang. I mean, no one's ever disliked the Astros before. Honestly, I mean, maybe after they won the World Series, you had a few people that were like anti-Astros because they, as you pointed out earlier this week, Tony, before they won, after the cheating, they are a very arrogant team.
Yeah.
So that tends to get people to dislike you. But I think the amount that people dislike the Astros this year is going to reach levels that we have never seen before. So even though the Astros aren't like an all-timer team for a team that we love to hate, I'm going to put them at number five on this list with a bullet. They may move up a little bit as time goes along. So I think that's how much they're disliked, at least right now.
This one may surprise some people, but I would have put the Astros at five. Because you put them at five, I would elect to move them out. But okay. I put the San Francisco Giants on there.
You may.
That team.
You may put them there.
My gosh. When I was here, when I was in L.A.,
no kidding, they were, man. That's they, right. Anywhere in Southern California, the Giants are your
they
anti-Giants.
They were a problem, and it's a disrespectful most hate. I mean, excuse me, it's a respectful most hated. Like,
okay.
I didn't like them because they did anything in particular that made me dislike them.
They took away the 2010 division from
that,
you.
That sits at the top
that
of
you
it.
You didn't like.
And, you know, it's a respect thing. They're a good organization during that time. And
I will jump. Can I piggyback on his number five? Because I didn't get the Giants in my list, but Giants fans,
ooh,
along with 49er fans and Warriors fans, you all are really, really tough to handle.
Tough.
You
they
guys are
tough.
Tough to handle. Somewhere, read a book on how to enjoy success without me despising you, because I've not run into too many Giant fans after they won their 3 World Series that I could deal with too comfortably.
Yeah, yeah. They got more obnoxious over time too, because they got one, then they got a second, then a third,
and then the Warriors came along, and then the 49ers came along, and these people in the Bay Area, man, you can't even talk to them anymore.
Do you lump the Giants into the wackadoo lunatics like Warrior fans?
Wackadoo lunatics,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yes.
They're the
That's
same
where
people.
That all came from, Thomas. That's where that all came from.
Number four.
All right, number four, team that people love to hate the most, I'll say America's team, Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
They still hold.
I thought you were going to say the Patriots.
Oh, it's coming. Don't worry.
Don't worry. Yeah, there's still plenty of room on the list, Thomas. But the Cowboys still have a polarizing effect. They still do. As long as they have the tag America's team, and I think they'll always have that, people are going to always love or hate the Cowboys. It doesn't really seem to matter if they have a good season or a bad season either. I mean, last season was 8-8, mediocre, but people were right there to the very last weekend of the year yelling and screaming about Jerry Jones and Dak Prescott and whether they wanted the Cowboys to make the playoffs or they didn't. So I think Dallas is still polarizing enough to be on this list. Number four.
Number four on my list will be the Los Angeles Clippers.
People like to hate the Clippers?
People that I know like to hate the Clippers.
Oh, that's true. You are running Lakers circles. But see, the Clippers were never worth hating until like a year or two ago, right?
I think they were worth hating for until a few years ago, right? I mean, Donald Sterling owned that team. Okay, they were very much worth hating until he let it go.
I see where you're coming from.
And then, plus, I'm a Laker fan, so it makes it easy for me to...
But you're coming from a little different angle here. You're not coming from the angle that the Clippers are good, so people hated them. You're coming from the angle that the Clippers were such a bad organization.
Run
so
yes.
poorly that most people just dislike them. Okay, fair enough. I can go with that.
Number three.
Number three on my list. Hang on a second. I'm going to duck after I say this.
Oh.
Lakers! I know Tony not going to like it, but hey, look at it this way, Tony. Nobody dislikes the Atlanta Hawks.
No.
Nobody dislikes the New Orleans Pelicans.
No.
Nobody dislikes even the Bulls anymore. The Lakers are such a great franchise. I probably could lump the Celtics in this, too.
Oh, they're
because,
coming.
Because we're on the West Coast, so we should actually hate the Celtics more. But I think the Lakers are the most polarizing franchise in the NBA now. And I think they've taken over that mantle from the Celtics. The Celtics had it in the 60s and 70s and, you know, maybe on through. But once Magic came and Showtime... I mean, universally loved, no question about it, here in Southern California. And even, you know, San Diego, right on up the, all the way up to close to the Bay Area, then you stop liking the Lakers. But I think around basketball, that's the number one marquee franchise. So if you're the number one marquee franchise, then that means that there's got to be enough people out there that love to hate you.
Word.
So you should wear that as a badge of honor, Tony.
I do.
To be
I do.
Honest with you.
I do.
Okay.
It's again, it's a respectful
Oh,
hated.
Yeah. Oh, no question.
Oh, wow. I lost my train of thought. Where was I? What number are we?
We're on three.
Number three.
All right. So number three for me has to be the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
This is an organization that for a very long time was – actually, they still have the – they have the most titles, right?
Oh, yeah.
This is
they're still
by,
ahead
they're
of the
by
Lakers.
One, right?
I think so, yeah.
And, again, over time, I've learned to have a respect for the Boston Celtics.
I never had one. I just didn't like them.
For a long time, I didn't like them. I didn't like them. But, yeah. And maybe I have a respect for them because Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce are no longer playing for him anymore. Guys who made it very difficult on the Lakers and the rest of the league. So I put them third. Obviously, as a Laker fan, that is the most hated team that you that you have.
Number two.
Number two for me is going to be the New England Patriots.
Ooh.
And again, they should be proud of that because when I was growing up, if you could turn back time. when I was growing up, I was a, I mean, I've always been a Dolphin fan. I never paid the Patriots. Thank you, Thomas. Now I feel more comfortable. But I never paid the Patriots even a second glance.
Yeah.
The Dolphins used to just brush them aside and go on and win the division championship every year. So I never worried about the Patriots. But now that the Patriots have become what they become, my goodness, you there has to be a long list of people that love to hate the Patriots. And there is a certain amount of respect that goes along with it. I even find myself rooting for them from time to time because I just appreciate their greatness. But I know that there's so many people out there that, you know, have had enough of the Patriots. And when you factor in the cheating potential and the Deflategate and the Spygate and just Belichick in general, I think it even goes up. You kick it up another
couple
of
notches. When
there's
smoke, there's fire.
Kick it up a couple of notches. So Patriots get number two. Which I'm throwing this out there to everybody because there's actually somebody above them, which is hard to admit, but the Patriots only make number two on my list. How about you?
Number two on my list, it's not necessarily a team that I hate, but I get the sense that a lot of people hate them. That's the Los Angeles Chargers.
Ooh.
Really?
Yes.
Well, here, you're speaking to the right crowd.
This is... Very they true. Have to be put in here. I mean, we do have a radio show based here in San Diego.
Good point.
The Chargers, and I've made it well known. I still enjoy the Chargers. But most people out here seem to be on the other side of that.
They have finally, especially and now that they've parted with Rivers.
Rivers is gone. I feel like the real hate can actually come out now. Because you're not going to be withholding anymore because of Philip Rivers. But I think out here, it's got to be number two on my list.
That's a pretty good call, actually, Tony. I really should have thought of them. I didn't because I don't put them in a national stage. But, I mean, in San Diego, there can't be a more hated franchise than the Chargers.
Yeah.
I think you're right on the money there.
You can almost change the team from a person almost in that aspect, too, with the Chargers. And just
you almost could just say you hate
Dean Spanos.
Dean Spanos. And you'd have the same reaction, same result.
Number one.
The number one franchise that people love to hate. Who do you think it is? Well, there's only one franchise in all of sports that I know of that is called the Evil Empire. And I think that's all you need to know. The New York Yankees are the number one franchise that people love to hate. Once again, I don't have a whole personal distaste for the Yankees. Boys growing up, National League fan. I watch National League baseball, so the Yankees don't disturb me that much. But 27, 28 World Series championships, every superstar player that's ever played the game, and the fact that they are still the richest, most powerful organization, if not in sports, certainly in baseball. I got to say that the Yankees are probably the number one most hated franchise of all. And I'm pretty sure the Yankees wear that with a badge of honor and are really happy about it. Because there's nobody that feels indifferent about the Yankees, right?
Nope.
You either say, hey, man, I love Derek Jeter, or I can't stand that guy.
Without a doubt.
So
without a doubt.
I'll put the Yankees on top.
My number one is also the Yankees.
Oh, is it? Okay.
It is. That's an organization that is one of the best organizations in sports.
They just are, yeah.
My disdain goes back to 1998.
Right.
They came in, whooped the Padres in a four-game sweep.
I know.
Known as one of the best teams ever in the history of baseball. It's just something about that pinstripe that just,
What's funny, Tony,
I respect it.
Sure.
But
You don't even have the same level of hatred, though, as most people do, because you don't go back the same generation. The George Steinbrenner generation, that grew the hatred exponentially.
Really?
Oh, yes. I mean, people couldn't stand George Steinbrenner when he was in his heyday. I mean, you talk about an owner. There's only one owner in sports currently that remotely compares to George Steinbrenner's arrogance and just ability to get under your skin, and that'd probably be Jerry Jones. He'd probably be the only one that you could even put in the same category.
Right.
But Steinbrenner was another level beyond Jerry Jones. Another level, maybe five more levels. Heck, the guy fired Billy Martin five times.
I remember Mr. Steinbrenner.
In like a 5-year span. Firing him and hiring him and firing him and hiring him. I mean, Steinbrenner had to be in the news every single day. That was imperative he had the biggest ego I've ever seen. So he kind of started the evil empire whole thing, was started with Steinbrenner.
There's a funny Simpsons episode with Don Mattingly in it, and throughout the whole episode, he keeps hearing Burns yell at him. He's like, Mattingly, keep those sideburns cut short. And at the end, he goes, man, this guy's harder to work for than Steinbrenner.
There you go. Harder than Steinbrenner. Yeah, Steinbrenner was the ultimate. All right. Good countdown, guys.
Fantastic countdown.
That's all for the countdown on 97.3 The Fan.
It's not a breakfast burrito,
no.
But it's not bad.
Got back to some sports. We talked to you guys earlier about the NBA kicking off last night.
Second half of the season.
Had some big games. The 76ers were able to get a victory.
They were way down.
And they were down big time.
Down, yeah. Came back. I noticed the Bulls did their usual collapse to open the second half of the season to take away any hope I might have of a second half run.
Resurgence. The Houston Rockets, they played the second primetime game after the 76ers, and that game was a blowout, but everybody's talking about the Russell Westbrook incident. He actually spoke on it as we played for you earlier today. And situation just seemed to be uncalled for. And the fact that I think one of the things that caught my ear after the game was that he acknowledges that because of his reputation, even when he may not be doing anything, he's got to be, I think the words he used was more aware of that fact when things are going down like that. And he said he's going to make it a point moving forward that he will go the extra mile not to receive texts. Because as he explained in this one, it doesn't seem like he actually did anything that warranted it. But because he's usually in the middle of things, referees, much like what Rasheed Wallace, much like all those guys who used to get texts, when they stop acting like that, that has followed you for a while.
There's no question. And I would
you're a referee.
I would have said the exact same thing. Russell Westbrook has the look on his face at all times when he's playing that, A, he's angry, B, he could explode into a rage at any moment. I don't believe that's his fault. I think it's part of what makes him a great player. He is as competitive, and he goes right, he takes it right to the edge, doesn't he, Tony?
All the time.
Pushes the limit of competitiveness, but that's what makes Russell Westbrook who he is. But it's just human nature, I think, as an official. When you see a guy like Russell Westbrook walking around the floor, you're going to be a little bit concerned that anything could set him off or anything could, you know, cause things to go a little sideways. And if you look at the incident last night, I mean, I think he caught the guy for Golden State there with an elbow. But it didn't look any more intentional than any other elbow I've seen
admitted,
in the NBA.
He admitted he wasn't, you know, the typical player saying, I didn't touch him. He said, it's obvious he hit him, but it wasn't on purpose.
No, it wasn't on purpose, and I don't think it was. And then he went over and he was standing on the side of the floor. Unfortunately, he was standing on the side of the Golden State Warriors, so he's inciting that even more. Then they have him move over to the other side, and one of the Warriors steps in his way, and he almost knocks that guy over. So he's just kind of, trouble is going to find Russell Westbrook on the court in the NBA. I think the officials actually kind of almost are aware of it now.
Yeah.
I don't want to say they give him any extra latitude, but they just know. I mean, this guy is a competitor beyond the word competitive.
You know what's funny is I noticed when it's a one-on-one situation, they do give him a lot more latitude. I just think, listen, because of things that have happened in the NBA's past, they aren't willing to necessarily give him that latitude when it comes to confrontations with the other players. They do not, the last thing they want, and it's in the back of every referee's mind, is the malice at the palace.
No, they don't ever want something
they don't
like
want
that
something
happen.
Like that. So when it comes to player on player
and
issues,
keep in mind Westbrook has gotten into it with fans before.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Didn't he have a situation?
He's got a few people
Utah?
Banned from Utah, yeah.
Yeah, Utah he had a situation.
Yeah, I think it's been the same place every time, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Two times in Utah.
But he is so ultra competitive that you have to referee him a little different.
Yeah.
I don't think there's an official anywhere that wouldn't tell you something like that. So but I respect the guy as an unbelievable player, and I don't think he'd be the same player if he didn't play with the same edge.
Yeah, no.
I mean, that's just what makes him what he is, so you just kind of got to live with that, and that situation last night got a little bit out of control, but not too bad, not too bad. The officials, they end up kicking him out of the game, though, right?
They did kick him out of the game. They kicked him out of the game.
It's going to happen to Westbrook probably a little. I mean, look, when Rodman was playing, if anything happened with Rodman, even if he glanced in the wrong direction,
that's a good comp.
There was like a quick tee given.
Yeah,
you
that's
had
a
to
good
tell
comp.
Rodman, it almost is an unfair one because I think Westbrook's actually not psycho crazy like Rodman was. But, you know, you had to just referee a little different with a guy like Rodman running around the floor. I mean, after all, he kicked a cameraman under the baseline for no reason one time.
Yeah.
You couldn't even predict as an official that something like that was going to happen.
No.
And so you just have to be careful. And that's going to follow Westbrook around, that's all.
That's going to do it for Gwen and Chris. We've got a short show today, a show only going to 6 o'clock. So we'll catch you guys on the flip side next week. I'm Tony. That's Chris. This is Gwen and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. You guys have a lovely, lovely weekend.
Great one.